This is Ouija Boards and Midnight Marks, where a spirit board conversation sparked our spiritual evolution. I'm Shale.
And I'm Cheyenne. And each week, we explore a world where there is much more than meets the eye. So pour yourself a drink and join us as we cheers to a witchin' good time. Welcome back, Ouija babies. How I've missed you. It's our mother forking finale.
It's gonna be so spooky too.
So spooky. What are you drinking this 9:30 a.m. morning?
While I'm really so proud of me because I actually put an effort today.
I love effort.
I made an elixir.
Ooh.
I know. I am obsessed with elixirs right now. They're my favorite thing. They just sound witchy and cool too.
I was going to say, yeah, you sound like a magical potion master.
Thank you. So it's a cacao elixir and it has coconut cream and its base is Eleuthera, which is starting to become a very important plant to me. And then I have my beautiful friend Dez's magical potion in here. It's her Euphoria glycerin. It's freaking divine. It is made with butterfly blue pea, which you know we love here, blue lotus, and vanilla extract. And oh my gosh, it is like the most heavenly addition to this little cup of coziness.
Yum. Shale's little mug says reach for the stars and it has stars inside of it. It's so cute.
It's so cute. The person, when I left my previous position, the person that I supervised gave it to me and it's just Aww. The cutest thing. Yeah. He was like, you can always reach for the stars.
You were like, I wish you knew how desperately I wanted to.
Yeah. But yeah, this is a cup of coziness to counteract the freakiness. Because Cheyenne and I were talking about this earlier. Like, I tend to be very desensitized to spooky things. But something about woods being haunted and whatnot freaks me out. But anyway, what are you drinking?
Yeah. I did not put in effort this morning.
Oh my gosh, look at us.
No effort. Oh, I like how you can tell I slept in my makeup and only one of my eyebrows survived the night.
Oh my gosh, I did not notice, but now I'm not going to.
That's amazing. Oh, right. It's fucking coffee. I'm having coffee. There is a little bit of Belgian chocolate Bailey's in here.
Ooh, delish.
Because it's Saturday. It's a 3-day weekend.
And it's a season finale.
And it's the season finale. I was like, if I'm not going to put in effort, I'm at least going to put in a little aperitif.
Add a little bit of spice.
Yeah, a little tiny bit of chocolate spice. And Shale and I were talking about this before where like I feel like Bailey's, because it's basically just heavy cream, doesn't really count.
Right, yeah, absolutely not.
It's like not really an Irish coffee.
And I can never think of Bailey's without thinking about Old Greg.
Yes, Old Greg. I was about to pull from our Buffy deck, but I don't know why we're not pulling from the Alien deck today, so hold please.
People are already like, of course Cheyenne finds a connection between aliens and national park disappearance.
All right. We're going to draw from our Mystic Martian Oracle. End the way we started. Thank you, Mandy, for being our generous benefactor of this season's sponsored tarot deck, Oracle deck. It's weird as fuck, girl. So thank you.
Also, if you don't have a Mandy in your life, y'all need one. She's the best. Like, absolute hype queen. Very thankful for her in this space.
Yes. Okay. Mystic Martian Oracle. Who are we taking insights from today?
I wish this is where I'm like, we need to have these on YouTube later on because, like, I wish you guys could see Cheyenne's little, like, grin as she's going through this deck.
Okay. We've drawn crop circles.
That feels very on brand.
Crop circles, motherfuckers. All right. So crop circles represent messages, curiosity.
I like how you get so close to the camera right now.
I know. I'm so excited. Okay. So it looks like the Windows home screen, the old Windows background that's just the sky and a hill. It looks like that. And then there's four little orbs floating in front of the clouds. And then there's obviously a beautiful starry crop circle in the foreground of the grass. So let's read about our crop circles. It's funny because I feel like this is luring me into a false sense of security because we're not talking about a specific species of alien, but I know I know it's going to stress us out regardless. Okay, crop circles. The crop circle phenomenon has intrigued contemporary society with discoveries of vast and intricate geometric patterns found in crop fields throughout the world, which mysteriously actualize overnight. The crop circles vary in design and size and can span over hundreds of feet. Shonky man-made prank style crop circles. Shonky is maybe the best word I've ever heard.
Yeah, can you explain what that means?
Yeah, let's Google it. Let's Google the etymology, shonky.
Shonky.
Of dubious, ooh, okay, so it's an informal, it's Australian slang.
Okay.
So it's dubious integrity or legality, unreliable or unsound. So shonky, human name.
Word for that. Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. Prank style crop circles have been found, yet pale in comparison to the authentic crop circles mastery and finesse. Ooh, okay, so you can tell when humans make these. Interesting. The discoveries of crop circles rarely, if ever, receive mainstream news to avoid evoking fringe researchers and UFO conspiracists to the forefront. Crop circles have been discovered largely in the UK, but also in China, USA, South America, Australia, Germany, Canada, the Czech Republic, the Netherlands, and Russia. Most ufologists and paranormal investigators believe the quality of the designs are clearly the responsibility of higher intelligent beings. Researchers believe the extraterrestrials are using this basic format as a way to bridge with humanity and communicate on a level that does not cause fear and alarm. Closer studies of the actual crop stems show they do not forcibly bend and snap stems to lay them down. Rather, they are delicately rounded and curved so that they bounce back later, still alive.
Aww.
I did not realize that. I kind of always imagined crop circles as being like mowed.
Yeah, I think I remember, I don't know why I have this core memory, but I remember watching a documentary back in like elementary school where they said that. They were like, this is the distinctive difference between a human-made crop circle and a not human-made crop circle is that the human-made ones, the stems are all snapped over because humans are destructive as all get out. So
we're the worst. Okay. Also, closer observation of many crops show they are intricately woven and not just randomly smashed. Visitors of these sites insist the energy for days after crop circles are found is magical and serene. Reports of witnesses observing crop circles being made say that glowing white orbs, okay, so that's what the orbs are on our card. Glowing white orbs fly around in silence above the crops, emanating some type of energy that instantly arranges the crops into designs. These orbs operate swiftly and in complete silence and then just fly away.
They're so like little alien will-o'-the-wisps.
Little extraterrestrial will-o'-the-wisps. I love it. Okay, so our card meanings are signs, omens, messages, curiosity, communication, unexpected, acknowledgement, and validation. And our reversed messages are needing constant validation, losing one's way, and block communication. Dun, dun, dun.
Why do I feel like a pit in my stomach all of a sudden? Like...
It's a little ominous. It is not as ominous as I thought it was going to be, but it is indeed ominous. Amazing. Okay. Do you wanna start us off with a creepy story or shall I?
Yeah.
What are we talking about today?
We are covering one of my like least favorite topics. In that we are covering scary stories and disappearances from national parks and like general kind of camping, being out in the woods. I don't know why this kind of stuff just like freaks me out so bad. But I'm also planning to go to Maine later this year on a hiking trip with my dear aunt. And that's why I'm like purposely avoiding all the Appalachia stories because shit is wild out there. But yeah, there's just something, I don't know, maybe it's primal too. Also, let's be honest, us as women, like being out in the woods by yourself, it's scary. But I do think there's like something generational and primal about being afraid of the woods. Small caveat to that though. When I say scared of the woods, I'm talking about like stuff that we just like can't explain. Not talking about like how we have been societally conditioned to fear the woods because we're afraid of anything wild. I'm not really scared of animals. I'm scared of like whatever the hell else is out there, kind of a thing.
Same.
So,
And darkness, I feel like, is a huge part of that, right? Like
yeah, daytime woods are fine.
daytime woods, no problems, zero concerns. I mean, that's not true. I'm concerned everywhere I go, but
Right. We're just anxious beings.
but yes. Okay, so give me one to start us off.
Okay. This is about a remote cabin in the woods. So it says, I'm not sure it counts as another human being because we didn't positively identify anyone. But a few years ago, my friend and I were staying in a small cabin my dad had on a remote piece of land in the Idaho wilderness. Oh, fuck.
Amazing.
I should have
Awesome.
read this first. Anyway, the nearest town was probably 50 miles away. That's actually not too bad for Idaho standards, just saying. And the nearest active road wasn't an old logging road that was about 2 miles from the cabin. My friend and I had been BSing and laughing in the cabin in our bunks, and it was about midnight. We had turned off the lantern and were trying to fall asleep when we heard something that sounded like something had scraped the door. We both lifted our heads up and mumbled a conversation of, did you hear something? Yeah. Then, in the middle of nowhere in this remote cabin, someone starts knocking on the door. Doesn't say anything, just knocks.
Ew.
We were both in our 30s, but we were scared shitless. We didn't say anything, just lay there with our heads up, staring at the door. That's how you know you're terrified when, like, neither one of you
You
is like
can't
speaking.
move. Yeah.
We didn't go out until it was light out again, and there was nothing near the door that would have tapped against it, and no animal tracks. Freaks me out even thinking about it. I hate it.
Don't fucking answer your door at night.
No. And like, there's something about these stories where people just seem to have this like intuitive knowing that it's something to not fuck with. You
Yeah,
know?
your animal instinct kicks in enough to be like, oh, there's a predator.
Yeah, because if it's a person, you know, then I feel like they would have reacted differently. And it just seems like somehow you know when it's a person versus not. And I don't want to know what that was.
Well, because like if it's a person, right? If it's a person who's intent on getting in or causing you harm, they're not just going to knock on the door.
That's true too.
Like they're not waiting for an invitation. This is not like a vampire style thing. They're gonna just break in if it's a person.
Right.
And I feel like there are some like unforeseen laws of the universe. Like our vampire lore comes from somewhere, right? Like
Yeah. Oh my God, what if I was a vampire? You have such a good point.
that folklore happens. And it could be more of just a supernatural thing in general of like you have to open the portal.
Right.
You have to accept it. You have to be a semi-willing participant, intentionally or otherwise. For them to actually engage.
Yeah.
Like, if you open that door, all fucking bets are off.
Right. Yeah. It's on you at that
It
point.
is 100% your responsibility. Yeah, that's
Hit me.
gross.
Hit me with the next one.
That is gross. Okay, so I have national parks one specifically. Perhaps the most famous and baffling of all of the strange disappearances. Okay, so we'll preface this by saying, an absurd amount of people, like a very high number of people, go missing in the national park system every year.
Yeah.
And that number is getting larger lately, which, like, there are more people on this planet. So,
But also, it's not like a national park in particular. Like
it's
you
everywhere.
would think someplace like Rocky Mountain National Park, for example, where it's like it can be pretty remote, right? There is a lot of dangerous like cliffs and stuff, but it can be like, I don't know, like any national park. It could be like one of the ones on the East Coast where there's not even mountains or anything, you
Yeah,
know?
any of them. So strange disappearances, strange things happen in our national parks. Part of this is like folklore, wild systems, right? Like our national parks are maybe some of the most wild places left here, as far as area. And a lot of them, there are so many areas that people never actually see of our national parks
Right,
because
there's no
they're
trails.
not built up. Like
Yeah.
they are meant to preserve a significant amount of land that isn't ours. We'll go ahead and just
Right.
toss a land back in here as well. But it's just, yeah, it's interesting how many unsolved, which I guess makes sense when you're thinking of places where like animals can go and eat you if you get lost and missing. But the number of cold case national parks missing persons, it feels like too many. It feels like a lot.
Right. But even to that point about like animals possibly eating you in a national park, like animals in national parks are so used to people. Even though there's pockets of places where like they would never see humans, like let's be honest, our national parks are overrun by humans in a lot of ways. So like that's where it gets freaky too, where it's like, how can you also have so many people in these areas and still have this amount of craziness happen? I don't know.
Ugh. Okay, so John Doe. I don't know if this is like the original John Doe, as far as like calling him that, but most baffling disappearance and reappearance is a young boy known only as John Doe. According to a Coast to Coast interview, 3-year-old John Doe was last seen near a fly fishing river, and then he promptly vanished for 5 hours. Where are these guys?
Oh, I think I've heard this story
It's
actually.
like the most famous one.
This one's crazy.
Why isn't the list of where he's?
Was it Yellowstone? Is that where he was?
It might have been. Why is the national park not? The national park is literally not named in this article. That is so weird. Okay, anyway,
Hey,
editing.
journalism here, like get it together.
I know. Concerned. Okay, so. He was last seen near a fly fishing river, and then he promptly vanished for 5 hours. A search party found him, dazed but unharmed, in the middle of a grove of trees. And John Doe had a strange story to tell. When investigators asked the boy what happened while he vanished, he said he followed a woman who looked like his grandmother to a mountain. He then found himself in a room that had a bunch of motionless robots and weapons lying all over a dusty floor. The boy then claimed he noticed a strange glow coming from the old woman's head. And then, most puzzling of all, she asked him to defecate on a piece of paper.
Okay, I've not heard this part of the
Just a little poop sample. And then the boy claimed she got agitated and aggressive when he refused to do so. The woman told the boy he was from outer space and that he was planted in his mother's womb.
What?
Then told him to go and wait in the trees until he was found. No one has any idea where he was when he disappeared, and it would be so easy to say his disappearance was just a child's imagination. However, there is another bizarre note that gives credence to John Doe's story. His grandmother had gone camping with him and claimed she was dragged out of her tent late at night.
What?
She woke up to a strange pain in the base of her neck and found two small holes near the back of her head.
Shut your mouth.
So what happened to John Doe? While many strange disappearances in national parks can be explained by kidnappers, oh, are we human trafficking out of our national parks?
Possibly.
That's gross.
I would not
It seems like
discount
one
it.
of the more believable explanations is actually out of this world.
That is not the story I was thinking of, and I hate everything about that.
It's just like, ugh.
Okay, like I get it. Kids have very vibrant imaginations, but that's some pretty specific details there.
Specific details and
Also,
not
why are we chalking everything up to kids' imaginations? Like, kids are smart. We discredit how intelligent
oh,
they really are.
especially because like children are the closest to our pre-life self. Like they still have some inkling of that. They have some memory of that embedded in you
Absolutely.
in some capacity. And you are way more open, right? Like stories about haunted houses and those kind of experiences, like, and especially before they learn the fear of something, like you hear imaginary friend stories from kids being like, oh yeah, that's my bloody friend Billy. And he's just like always bloody. And you're like, is that not scary? And he's like, no, he's like nice to me. He's like, I don't care.
I feel like we need to make Bloody Billy merch. Like that just
Bloody Billy.
seems
Like that happens
funny.
all the time, right? And you're like, oh,
Yeah.
you should probably be scared of that. And they're like, no, it's like the creepy Victorian lady who just hangs out in my room.
Right. She kind of looks like grandma. It's
Yeah.
fine.
It's like, whatever. She
It is
plays with
interesting
me.
how there does seem to be a spectrum where a lot of kids are just like so chill and nonchalant and not bothered by stuff like that, you know?
So glad my imaginary friend was a dragon. Oh my God.
Seriously, thank you, banana. All right. So this one says, I feel late to the party, but this story seems relevant. A friend and I were scoping out an area for hiking because we were both new to the area. It was probably 6 p.m., but pitch black because it was the dead middle of winter when it gets dark around 4 p.m. We drove down a dead-end dirt road to try to find a trailhead we had heard about. The road is probably only about 2 to 3 miles long, and we didn't see anything on our way down. We get to the dead end and turn around to head back out to the main road. About halfway from the dead end to the main road, we see a man standing at the edge of the road in tattered clothes and covered in dirt, carrying a shovel, staring us down. My friend and I both held our breath until we were back in town and asked each other if we saw the same thing.
You didn't even talk about it in the moment. Okay, this kind of reminds me of our story driving to the cult, though.
But again, that was one of those situations where all of us were like, I don't know if that was an entirely human experience.
That is fair.
I do
Bizarre.
remember, like, that is one of the core aspects of that memory that I have is like all of us just immediately going silent and just not saying anything to each other until we were like a good 5 miles away
True,
from it.
we did get away before we talked. Interesting how your body just kicks
Yeah.
in those scenarios. I'm
Wild.
just like, as we read these two, I have camped by myself in the woods so many fucking times, like with a dog. Like, I'm never like 100% alone, but Willie and I, like, every other weekend we were camping in Idaho or Montana alone. And sometimes I forgot lights. One
Oh
time I
my
forgot
God.
a flashlight. It
Oh my
was an
God.
actual
No.
nightmare.
That is something, as much as I love nature and stuff, that is something I have not yet done, is completely camped by myself. Like, there's just something about the thought of being out there alone, even with my dog. But let's be honest, like, I love Rowan to death, but like, he is not a killer by any means. So, Willie's scrappy. I imagine Willie can go toe to toe with someone, but Rowan, I don't know. I feel like he'd be like, you're on your own, dude.
Well, then Willie will like bark at big rocks. Like,
Yeah.
Willie's distrusts everyone. So,
Right.
like, you're just already starting at a good baseline. Rowan's like, oh, you have snack?
Yeah, right.
Oh, I'll be your friend.
Your big scary claws don't seem
Like, let's go play.
that
Oh my God. Okay. Oh, this one's sad.
bad. Uh-oh.
This is a Colorado story. This is the story of Alfred Bealhearts. In 1938, 4-year-old Alfred Bealhearts was vacationing with his family in Colorado's Rocky Mountain National Parks. His parks park. His patients were watching his patients. I write for doctors. I'm sorry. His parents were
Remind me.
watching him carefully as they went out for a quick hike near a river. Then, without warning or trace, he vanished. It is among one of the strangest disappearances in our national parks. He was only feet away from his family, and then he was gone. A 6-mile search of the area that he disappeared showed nothing. However, dogs were able to trace his scent 500 feet uphill from where he vanished. The only problem was that there were no footprints and no Alfred to be seen. Stranger, the dogs that traced the scent seemed to be confused by what they were smelling, and they quickly lost it. Once the dogs traced the scent uphill, the two pups began to cock their heads and get nervous. Eventually, both bloodhounds ended up laying down on the ground and refused to go further on any trail. Alarmingly, some hikers who were walking 6 miles away from where Alfred disappeared claimed they saw a young boy in a particularly dangerous and difficult to reach out rock outcropping called the Devil's Nest. The Devil's Nest is like on fucking Long's Peak, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Like, it's like up there. The two hikers said they had only seen the boy minutes after he allegedly disappeared. Stranger, they claimed the boy seemed dazed and upset and appeared to be jerked back by an unknown force.
Ew.
A 4-year-old boy would not reasonably or logically be able to travel 6 miles and uphill over 3,000 feet on his own. Even the survival specialists who searched for him needed special equipment to get up there. So, who or what grabbed little Alfred? We may never know, as he was never found. To this day, his case is one of the most unexplained and disturbingly strange disappearances in our parks on record.
That one makes me like sick. I
Yeah.
don't like that one at all.
Sounds yucky.
Ugh. And like to be the hikers that saw him, ugh. I don't like it.
Now I was all excited to have the house to myself today.
I know, same. Now I'm like heebie-jeebies
Gonna have
everywhere.
to open all my windows so my neighbors will hear me scream.
Good plan there. All right, you're gonna hate this one.
I love it already.
When out exploring an old abandoned quarry with some friends, we found this dude stood staring at a rock, just occasionally twitching, but he never turned around. We were pretty creeped out, so we didn't investigate and left pretty soon later. Or excuse me, left pretty soon after. Later on that night, we found out that another friend was driving down the lane that matched, or that, excuse me, they were driving down the lane that runs parallel to the quarry, found a guy in a black coat stood in the middle of the road and wouldn't move. She was pretty freaked out and had to reverse all the way back up the lane in the dark because he was still there. Pretty sure it was the same guy. Otherwise, it was just a big coincidence.
Ew.
My God.
I mean, those are like, these are the jump scares that get me more than any other jump scare, though, when you're like watching those videos and then you like suddenly see the clown or the person who's like just fucking standing
Yeah.
in the woods looking at you and you're like, why the fuck are you here? Like, ugh, disgusting. You're right, I hated it. Okay. No, that one's sad. Ew, no, we're not reading that one. I'm tired of reading about little children.
It's sad.
Okay, this one is Thelma Pauline Melton. Not all of the strange disappearances in national parks happen to young children. Thelma Pauline Melton, which is a great name, also called Polly by her friends, was 58 when she vanished during a camping trip with friends in the Great Smoky Mountains. Polly was not exactly a normal candidate for a disappearing act for a number of reasons. For one thing, she had medical problems that caused her to hike at a very slow pace. She was also a happy, well-put-together person, and no one believed she would have any reason to want to disappear. Simply put, it didn't seem like she would want to do anything drastic. To make matters stranger, Melton had been hiking the trail that she vanished on for over 20 years. She knew the terrain, and it wasn't likely that she got lost. Perhaps that's why her friends were so alarmed when she vanished while hiking with them. Just like the other disappearances, one moment she was there hiking behind them, the next she wasn't. She didn't make any noise, and no trace of her was ever found.
Ew.
People are just getting snatched. They're just getting body
Ew.
snatched.
I mean, the most logical thing that comes to my mind is like mountain lions, but still, I feel like you would.
You would hear it, right? If you're
Yeah.
hiking with someone, a mountain lion's at least gonna like scuffle, even if they're not snarly.
Or like, even if they're, I mean, they're silent until they attack you, sure. But like the fact that you wouldn't scream or something, you know, I don't know. Just seems too weird.
A little too weird and a little too convenient. Like, I don't doubt the apex predator mountain lion, but I just feel like they're not gonna like kill throat shot you immediately. Like
That's what I'm saying.
it's
Yeah.
gonna take a minute. Yeah. You're at least gonna hear somebody like their feet, right? I don't know.
Would
Yeah.
hope. You would hope. All
Yucky.
right, I got kind of a Bigfoot one.
Ooh, I love Bigfoot one.
Me too. So, once a friend and I were driving on an old dirt road way out in the sticks in South Alabama, past an old 19th century cemetery, when out of nowhere a truck starts tailgating us. This was really late at night, and even in the daytime, it would have been rare to see a vehicle, so we were a little creeped out. I speed up, and the truck stays right on my bumper. I'm now driving as fast as I can without flying off the road in this small, windy dirt road. Think Dukes of Hazzard, only in a Volvo station wagon. And I still can't shake the truck. My buddy who was with me knew the area well and said we were about to hit a paved road, T-bone intersection, and that there was also another small dirt road coming off at a sharp angle from that intersection. He said that if I could get ahead just enough to get out of the immediate sight of the truck, then I could cut the wheel hard to the left and whip out into the spur road and hopefully ditch the truck. I did what he said. But right when I start the turn at the T-bone, I see what looks like an incredibly tall person just outside the tree line across the paved road, covered head to toe in long hair. As I'm turning, I shout, "Holy shit, do you see?" And before I can finish, my friend says, "That big, tall, hairy guy." I finished the turn, we ditched the truck and got the hell out of there. But to this day, we don't really know what we saw. That's a chaotic encounter. Like, there's a lot going on in that story.
That big, tall, hairy guy. Ugh.
And like, yeah.
Those
What
like
was the
kind of
truck
like
doing?
tailgating, like, ugh. 'Cause is that just like the unfortunate coincidence
Yeah.
of somebody trying to like do shady human shit to you?
I don't know.
And then you just happen to be in a weird spot and you just catch a Bigfoot just like picking up
Yeah,
on
could you
your
imagine? I would feel like I would need to process this like experience
like
for a long
just
time,
so
just break it
much.
down.
Ugh.
Or was this truck also maybe they had seen Bigfoot as well and were trying to get away and they weren't actually trying to do something bad to the Volvo. There's like the Volvo just needs to get the hell out of here. I don't know. There's a lot there. A lot going on there.
There is a lot there. Ooh, okay. How about a Grand Canyon story? Let's do an Arizona one. The newlyweds who disappeared in Grand Canyon National Park.
Oh, it's unfortunate.
The Grand Canyon might be best known for its 5,000-foot walls, but the rapids at the bottom of the gorge are huge as well. The Green River and Colorado River descend for more than 270 miles into a torrent of class 4 and 5 whitewater. Okay, outside edit. Get me to the scary part. Okay, arguably the most famous and mysterious drowning incident happened in 1928 when newlyweds Glenn and Bessie Hyde attempted to paddle the Grand Canyon on their honeymoon. They were in a boat that Glenn had built, attempting a speed record paddle through the canyon that also would have made Bessie the first woman to run it. Rubber rafts wouldn't become common until after World War II. The Hydes were last seen on November 18th, and their boat was found intact with all of their supplies a month later on December 19th. Boat was in perfect condition with all of the contents, including Bessie's diary, intact. Search parties scoured the canyon, but their bodies were never found. It's possible and probable that the couple washed out of the boat during one of the rapids and the vessel continued downstream without them, but both of the people were experienced rafters. A popular theory has emerged over the years that Bessie murdered her new husband somewhere deep in the canyon. Another river runner, Emery Kolb, encountered the couple deep in the canyon and noted Bessie's hesitance to continue the journey and that they didn't have life jackets.
Interesting.
In
Your experience?
1971, ooh, this gets weirder. This is weird. A
This
woman
is weird.
Elizabeth Cutler claimed to be Bessie Hyde, alleging that she had stabbed her husband during a fight and had been living a different life ever since. Cutler eventually denied the claim, and it was later rumored that the pioneering river runner Georgie Clark, the first woman to own a commercial rafting business in the Grand Canyon, was actually Bessie Hyde. After Clark died in 1992, the Hyde's marriage license was found in her home, as
Shut
well
up.
as a birth certificate identifying her as Betsy DeRoss, according to an account by North Uni Arizona University.
So
DeRoss was
she
the
kill him
first.
and use the insurance money to start a business? Is that what we're saying?
Georgie Clark was married twice and had a daughter who died in a bicycle accident.
Huh.
But we still don't have enough information to confirm that it was Bessie, that Clark was Bessie, and some historians have discounted it. But how else would you have somebody's marriage license?
Yeah, and their birth certificate.
In that, like, especially then, like, you're not like printing a fake.
Yeah.
Ooh, gross.
Oh, interesting.
Murder.
That one was like more intriguing, which I appreciate.
Yeah. Also, I mean, she's breaking glass ceilings. We love to see it.
Oh
Maybe
my God.
he deserved it. There, look, you have to imagine, like, women couldn't even have credit cards until the 70s, right? Like,
Crazy, yeah.
the reason jewelry it was such a popular gift is so you had something to sell for cash in the event you
Right.
needed to get out of something. So if your only options are to live with this abusive, allegedly husband, or murder him and then open your own river rafting business, which option would you choose? Definitely murder.
Yeah, interesting. Kind of baller that she was like the first female-owned rafting company in
Yeah, I
the
love
Grand
that.
Canyon. Interesting. All right. I also have a river story for you-ish.
Do it.
I was once canoeing the boundary waters between Minnesota and Canada. These aren't your normal backyard ponds. The boundary waters are thousands of enormous lakes interconnected with each other. Think mini Great Lakes. We had been canoeing and camping along the lakes for about a week at this point. We didn't really have an itinerary, just planned to boat and camp, fish, and live off the land for 2 weeks. We had a GPS and a sat phone to call for a helicopter for pickup whenever we were done. Anyway, about a week in, and we were set to canoe a few hours to the next lake. An hour or so in, and we are in the center of an extremely long and narrow lake. Unfortunately, a storm started to blow in, and the waves on the lake swelled to 2+ feet. It's freaky. Too much for our dinky canoes. We pull off to a random clearing on the shore and set up camp in rush to avoid being totally thrashed by a rainstorm. We had just set up camp and hunkered down for the night. By the next morning, it had cleared up. We started walking up the coast of the lake about 200 feet from our camp, looking for a good fishing spot. What we found was another campsite. However, it was absolutely wrecked. Trash strewn everywhere, tent collapsed and torn, clothes on the ground. At first, we were just disgusted, like, what jerks did this or left their shit out to be bear food? The more we looked around, though, the weirder things seemed. For one, their garbage was still hoisted into a tree to keep it safe from bears, but the whole bag was ripped open despite being 30 feet in the air. Second, literally everything except the canoes were still at the campsite. Clothes, packs, food, rope, pans, like a serious set of hiking equipment. Enough for two or three people. Half of it was trashed and torn open, mostly the packs, tent, and clothes. The other half was totally untouched but thrown on the ground, like somebody noped the hell out of there in nothing but their long johns, ditching hundreds of dollars of gear in the process. We waited a couple of hours and eventually called it back to our helicopter crew, but they hadn't been aware of anybody else or gotten any distress calls. We eventually just left everything and moved camp. Everybody was pretty upset by it, and a day or two later, we ended the whole trip early because it seemed like nobody wanted to be out anymore. It was the weirdest thing I'd ever seen. First thought was a bear attack, but there was food left uneaten, and I've seen bear attacks on camps before, but nothing like this. Bears rip open packs and go after food and are generally pretty easy to scare away. What still sticks with me is why all their clothes and packs were still there, with half being totally destroyed and half being untouched. I still don't get it. I've done a lot of other camping and hiking, rafting and biking all around the country and have never had any other weird experiences like that.
Creepy.
But who knows what it was? The
Ugh.
one that gets me is like the fact the their like bear bag being 30 feet off the ground and that was also ripped open. Like, I don't love that.
Yeah, like what flying monster?
Flying spaghetti monster.
Spaghetti monsters attacked your campsite. Ugh, gross. These are yucky. These make me feel yucky. Okay. Let's do one more national park. Unfortunately, it's probably going to be another kid. I'm sorry. Okay. David Gonzalez. 9-year-old David Gonzalez went camping with his family in the San Bernardino National Forest. At one point, he asked his mother if he could go get some cookies from the family car. 40 minutes passed and his mother realized that David never returned. Okay, if my mom was like, go get cookies out of the car and I was gone for more than 2 minutes, she'd be like, where the fuck are my cookies?
Literally. Also, you're just out of the car. What the hell?
She went to the car and the cookies he wanted to grab were still inside. He was never found alive again. His death is viewed as one of the strange disappearances in national parks.
Wait,
A
so
week
do they
later,
know? Okay, I was gonna say,
it
how
gets weird.
do they know he died?
Yeah, it gets weirder. A week later, a badly decomposed body was found only a mile away from where he went missing.
Only a mile, as if like a mile's a long ways.
A mile's a decent ways if you're a kid, too, for sure.
Yeah.
Mysteriously, this area had already been combed days prior. So this means the boy must have been dropped there by someone or something. An
Ugh.
autopsy revealed no trauma and no overt injury. David Gonzalez was just dead without any reason or clues as to why. This is already baffling, considering the power of forensics and the skills of investigators. This must be a relatively, it is a relatively recent one because the picture is of a bloodhound and a lady who's like wearing probably early 2000s clothes. Okay, but what makes this case So strange is not his disappearance alone. It's the way the local authorities and investigators seemed to handle the case. To put it simply, the police and investigators were flippant. Any questions were answered with vague replies. Even when they, when the Pollides, that must be his family's name. This is, again, I didn't write these, okay? asked authorities for records about David. Oh, Pollides must be a journalist. He was met with hostility. The officials claimed that David was dragged off by a mountain lion, despite no injuries that would suggest that to be his fate. No one nearby heard him scream either. Doesn't that seem a bit strange?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Authorities in most cases involving strange disappearances are rapt with attention and will scour every last inch of terrain to find a missing child. However, when it comes to strange disappearances in our national parks, many officials seem unwilling to be fully open and honest. David's parents have gone on record to say they don't believe David was dragged off by a cougar. They believe he was kidnapped and that he still may be alive somewhere and the body may not even be his.
Whoa.
Some believe the authorities know more than what they're saying. At the very least, it's clear there's more mystery and danger in our parks than we're willing to admit.
I hate that.
Ew.
I hate it so much.
Ew.
I just don't like thinking about like corrupt law enforcement systems in national parks of all places.
Okay, like, so I think about this a lot in the sense of like what what I as a regular human person with like no children has the mental capacity to hold and endure throughout like my day.
Yeah.
And it just blows my mind that people are spending this much energy on this kind of stuff. I'm like how?
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you find the time to be so evil? I just don't.
Yeah.
It's confusing. It's like a weird thing to say, but it is. I'm like, who?
It's true.
Like all of these deep, it baffles me that I'm like, there are so many like ever-present issues and problems that are like very obvious that we should be working towards solutions for. And we're like funneling a lot of money, a lot of places for different things. But I'm just like, what are we doing here? Like, yeah. Why? Like, why? Have we considered the question of why so many of our national, this is the part of the story where we get men in blacked.
Yeah.
Why so many of our national parks have really heavy military presence, either inside them or nearby? Like,
I'm actually not aware of that. And it, like, now I'm, feel
yeah,
like that's a rabbit hole I'm going to be going down later today.
I mean, like, there's, like, Yellowstone has, like, a full-ass fort, like, inside of it.
What?
Yeah.
In the park?
In the park, yeah. Yellowstone has one of the largest military presences of any of our national parks. You can go down hours and hours and hours of a Yellowstone rabbit hole. There are obviously supernatural, like, alien theories in Yellowstone. Yellowstone comes with all sorts of other interesting, like, supernatural phenomena, but Bigfoot is cited in Yellowstone often.
Well, and, like, if you think, like, Yellowstone of all places, I feel like should have, like, if there's going to be a cryptid, it's going to be in Yellowstone.
It's
like,
going to be in
about
Yellowstone.
The geothermal capability.
Well, and so Bigfoot lives anywhere that black bears live, Bigfoot lives. Like, that's the environment that Bigfoot lives.
Okay.
Which is why they always try to pet. They're always like, it's a black bear. You saw a black bear.
But also black bears live everywhere. So that feels like an easy cop out for them too.
Doesn't it?
Yeah. Also, Yellowstone has grizzly bears, which I feel like then you have a double whammy.
Double whammy. Do you remember, like, I don't know if it was last year or whatever, the Georgetown train, the Bigfoot
site? Oh,
side,
yeah.
The train?
Oh, my gosh. Yes. That was wonderful.
That was, like, confirmed a dude in a suit, right?
Do you know how many people sent that to me, by the way?
So funny.
So it was like, oh, yeah, Shale, she's into this shit. I'm going to send it to her, like, 8,000 times.
I'm going to send it to Shale.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. There's some questions. So many, I mean, obviously so many alien rabbit holes you can go down with national park stuff. So let's just do a quick Google of how many people went missing in national parks last year. Let's just see. Let's just see. Okay. Since the year 2013, in California alone, over 15,000 reports of missing people, cold cases, not found.
Ew, what was that sound? I
Yeah.
sure walls people. I need to not be scared by that.
At least 56 people have been reported missing from the Grand Canyon since the beginning of 2018.
That's
56 people is a lot of people to go missing and not find a body.
yeah, for sure.
Like, I just, it's alleged that, like, on average, about 15 to 1800 people go missing in the national parks every year.
Is that like on like across the board or like
Across the
per?
board.
Because I was gonna say, if that's per park, like we have some serious issues
No,
here.
not quite per park, but like 56 in one park, that's a fucking lot.
That is a lot.
Yeah, why hundreds of people vanish into the American wilderness. Okay, more than 600,000 people go missing in the United States every year.
600,000?
Thousand.
That's insane.
Ew. That's a Business Insider. Uh, 600,000 people disappeared. That's so sad.
Yeah, honestly. And that's just like what's reported, right? Like
That's
there's
just
probably more than that.
reported. I don't ever want to go outside again.
Well, I'm gonna finish with one more spooky, creepy people out in the woods story for you, and then we can go into
Amazing.
our housekeeping.
Let's do it.
All right. Says out in the boonies and about to do some shooting in the woods. This is a very American story. Truck comes over the ridge on a one-lane logging road. Seeing the oncoming vehicle, we pull over as far as possible to allow them to pass. They do not pass. They pull up as close to my vehicle as possible. I mean, inches, if that, kept our rigs from touching. Two country ass dudes, that's what it says. Two country ass dudes in ragged clothing drinking beer with rifles across their laps. The back of the truck is full of lumber. This was a logging area, after all. We say hello, silence. Ask if they are shooting, silence. They
Ew.
do nothing but sit quietly and stare at us. This gives me like
Ew.
the weird experience we had in our hometown vibes. Then a dozen vehicles come over the ridge in a line. These vehicles are packed with lumber, minivans with a bucket seats full. A Honda Civic with the back seat, shotgun, and trunk teeming with lumber. Teeming with lumber. That's hard to say. All of which is being illegally stolen from the lumber company that felled the trees but hasn't transported them. Literally felonious amounts of lumber being stolen, and we are the only witnesses out of cell range in the middle of nowhere. My buddy has a shotgun or has a handgun drawn and low. Mine is pressed to the car door, pointed right at these guys. We sit in complete silence till the final car passes, and then they drive off without a word.
Ew. I
Wow.
guess I just didn't realize that there were like covert lumber, like black market lumber stealing things
I
happening
did not
there.
either, but I guess it makes sense. And like,
There's so much about this world that I don't understand.
and why is that like so unnerving? Like you're very like the people are very much aware of what is happening, and these dudes are just staring into their soul. Like you say a
They're just
word.
like, you say anything and you're gone.
Yeah, and like what an effective intimidation tactic, I
Well,
guess.
yeah, because then
I
you're
wouldn't say
watching them and
anything.
you're like, you're aware that they're like, nobody's writing down license plates. Like,
Yes.
they're not taking a picture of you. You're just confirming that all of your people can get by them.
Yeah.
I love the idea of somebody packing a bunch of fucking logs in a Honda Civic. Like,
I don't know, desperate times, man. Desperate times.
I guess.
Because I mean, I will say, like, as somebody who had to go get firewood back in the day, like, it's not a fun process all the
God,
time.
I hated getting firewood.
Oh, I mean, if you could just, like, have half the work done for you.
Because I had to be the person in the back of the truck stacking it.
Right. That's the worst job. That is
And
it.
because it's my dad and he's like meticulous and oh God, no offense, dad, but like it's not like we're just like cutting up the logs and throwing them in. No, we're like chopping them all. We're like making them all firewood in the fucking woods. And I'm like, can
Right.
we cut them at home?
And they have to like fit like in this real aesthetic way. They
Yeah.
can't just be like thrown in there. Yeah,
No,
no.
you have to get it as like much as possible. And then I'm like hunched over in the back of the truck because the stupid like dome thing is on it.
And I don't know why we do this to ourselves, but we always go when it's like the start of winter and it's brutally cold and you don't want to be out there.
Or alternatively, when it's like 90 fucking degrees.
Yeah.
Like, why are we here?
Yeah.
Anyway, my dad would say because we were building character.
100%. And people are always like, getting firewood is like one of my fondest memories. Is it? Is it?
I have a lot of fond memories of my childhood. Getting firewood is not one of them.
Yeah, no.
Like, absolutely.
Do I enjoy being out in the nature with my family? Yeah. Do I like doing freaking hard labor? No.
Ew. You know what's worse than getting firewood, though? Because we grow up with parents who are like, we're going to build all our things and fix all our things. And I'm like, hire someone. We didn't have money. I didn't know that.
We didn't have DIYers anymore in our adult life.
I was not aware. Was getting rock. Like going to get fucking river rock for like my mother's garden.
Thankfully never had to do that, but I could empathize with how awful.
Because
that
not was. Only are you hauling rocks, you are looking for the, like, they've got to be a certain kind of shape and all roughly the same size, and then they need to be kind of flat. And I'm like, I would prefer an alien come and drag me out of here now.
I actually do have like the distinct memory of like wanting to hang out in high school, and there was like a couple months it seemed like where every single weekend you're like, I have to move rock. I'm not allowed to hang out.
Moving so much rock. And my parents would hire the FFA.
Yes. Honestly, that was smart on their behalf though.
My mom would literally hire the FFA to come and like dig up, because we lived on like an old riverbed, the spot that our house was on. And so we did the whole yard needed complete renovation. My mom needed her garden. And so we were like digging rocks out of the ground and then just moving piles of rocks for, like 3 months out of my year.
You were strong as hell, though, at that point in your life.
Yeah, it's really hard for me to figure out how to work out as a grown up. I don't know how to do the gym. Like, I don't, because I'm just used to like picking heavy things up and putting them in a pile. And right. Then doing that 500.
That's why you need to like train like it's the Highland Games. You'd crush it.
I should. That would be fun.
Yeah.
The worst, man. Okay. Housekeeping. This is our season finale.
Woo! We made it.
Season five. We did the damn thing. I always season finale is always such a weird, bittersweet thing, because I'm like, I'm writing a novel right now. Shale is like deep in herb school. We are busy as fuck. And I know it doesn't seem like this takes a lot of time.
It takes a lot of time.
It takes so much more time than you think it does. Even these nonsense episodes where we're just reading other strangers' internet stories.
And also the emotional turmoil afterward. Like, Cheyenne and I need probably an hour or two to decompress from these creepy-ass stories.
Absolutely going to go watch Love is Blind after this. Like, no question. But I always do get sad, too. I'm like, oh.
I know.
But I'm going to miss you guys.
Yeah.
So what's happening, Shale? What do people need to know about season five ending? What people can do to stay in touch with us this summer? And what's happening for season six?
Yeah. So you probably, I mean, it's not like you see a whole lot of us in our summer breaks anyway. But this time, don't take it personally because of the fact that we are so busy. I'll be graduating from herb school in July. Cheyenne's like super deep into a novel, which is amazing.
Which I'm writing about someone who's getting fucking lost in the woods because of
you totally are. I was thinking about that the whole time actually.
Or but Hannah.
Anyway, we have things that are exciting on the horizon, and you know, dreams coming to fruition that we've been moving towards last few years. So it's a good thing, but yeah, OBMM is going to have to take a little bit of a backseat over the next couple of months. But that being said, we are going to be kind of shifting things around how we do season six, which is crazy to even say out loud that we're on season six. No. So typically, as you all know, we do this on like a weekly structure, but that's going to be changing next season. So we will still be coming back around Samhain per the usual, because we can't break tradition that way, obviously. But instead of a weekly format, we're going to be doing monthly. The good news is that you're going to get less like scrambly morning brew type episodes.
Correct.
And you will have much more like intention put behind every episode. Not that we don't put intention behind, but you guys get what I'm saying.
Like more research.
Well, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So yeah, you can expect that. And what's also going to be shifting is things like, I mean, book coven's already on a monthly basis, but weekly working was a huge experiment this year. And we all found that it's like super overwhelming to try to do things every single week. So that's also going to be moving to a monthly schedule. But yeah, that's going to be like the biggest change. What else
you
is
can still find us both of those places through the summer. So book club is not going to pause. I don't 100% know. I'm assuming weekly working the conversations are still going to happen. Like that group chat will be active whether or not we're giving each other specific homework. It will probably happen more around like full moon, new moon check-ins kind of
I think we could start the monthly
working
now. Like, I think that's a cool way for us to stay connected through the summer. It gives us something to kind of check in on our practice throughout the year. Especially because, like, for me especially, like, spring and summer are my busiest seasons just because of being a plant person and stuff like that, and like balls deep in the garden and all of that kind of stuff. So I think it'd be good just for me personally to have something like that to connect to my practice through the busiest energetic time of the year too.
Yeah. So if you miss us, if you don't want to miss us, send us a DM. You can be in one group. You can be in both groups. There's a lot of overlap in both of them. If you want to read with us, if you want to share fun, pretty altar pictures and personal practice vibes in the weekly chat, there's a decent amount of people in both of them, but they are still very small and cozy, and that space feels very nourishing and protected and safe for us.
Everyone's very supportive. If you're not supportive, you're not allowed.
Yeah, we'll kick you out. We've never had to kick anyone out. The people who listen to this are all very lovely. You're all so nice. So yeah, you can expect a year of OBMM coming to you this October. In the meantime, if there are topics you want us to cover or creepy alien encounters you happen to have this summer, please always send them to us. And if you're tired of listening to me talk about aliens, get over it. It's not going to happen.
But to that point too, we probably will have significantly less guests next season just because we want to have more opportunity for us to really like deep dive and do some good research on our episodes and whatnot. So
yeah, the most fun about continuing to do seasons is getting to points where we can do that because you've been around, you know us, we've done the basics and established some very shaky credibility.
It's holding on by a thread.
It's just barely there. And then we can get into these cases. So if there are cold cases, if there are murders you want us to investigate, send your creepy stories. We'd love to hear them.
And we also, like, it's no surprise that a lot of the more spooky topics seem to do the best around here. So we'll definitely keep diving into those. But if there's any kind of like more witchy topics you want us to cover, also let us know. Like, Cheyenne and I are eternal learners in that regard. And I'm also making a personal commitment to reading one witchy book per month, starting next month. One herbal book and one witchy book so that I can learn shit. Because I just don't feel like I know enough.
Send me what's on your witchy TBR and we'll just make it work smarter, not harder. And we'll add them to the book coven.
Yeah, I can definitely do that.
Easy peasy, lemon squeezy. I love you guys so much. What the fuck is our permission slip today?
Oh gosh.
A really good, insightful one to leave you on. Crickets.
You feel the need to take a self-defense class after this? We totally understand.
To that point though, I do think I think
you have one actually.
Do it. Okay.
If you feel that you need to reorganize your life sometimes.
Yeah, same.
And
same
you feel
level.
Like you need to not, I don't want to say this and that people are thinking that we're like not prioritizing OBMM, because that is not the case at all. But if you do need to like shift things around a little bit, and some things do need to take a back seat for a little bit so that you can focus on what lights your fire, do that. That's okay. Yeah. It doesn't mean you don't care. It doesn't mean you're not passionate. Just some things need to shift once in a while. And that's okay.
Taking breaks is healthy. Saying no is healthy. And intentional time away makes our time together so much more special.
Yeah.
Aw, cute.
Distance makes the heart grow fonder.
We're so procrastinating. Cheers, witches. We love you.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Ouija Boards and Midnight Marks. If you're having a witching good time, we hope you'll help us to grow this little coven. You all know it's us against AI in this algorithm eat algorithm world, so please help us out. Please like, rate, and subscribe anywhere you're listening to us. Also, we want to connect with our spooky Marg-loving friends out there, so please like and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Links for those profiles will be in the show notes. And hey, be sure to tell us what you're drinking tonight. We love you all so much, witches. Cheers.